Chaos is an indicator that change is required.
Self-control is strength. Right thought is mastery. Calmness is power. Peace be still.
Patience is the calm acceptance that things can happen in a different order than the one you have in mind.
Better to fight for something than live for nothing.
Those who inspire lead.
Daiman Jinman is a Haitian proverb that means beyond every mountain, there's another mountain.
We're going to ask you this question all f***ing day long. Why are you here?
The more powerful language we speak, the less power we leak. My name is Luke Kayam. We are a brotherhood of men committed to show up. This is the Fathers of the Future podcast.
Show up! Don't quit! Do the work! Lead with love! Trust the process!
Welcome to the Fathers of the Future podcast. Another first on this episode. I am here with my longtime brother, Eric Whitey White, on the beach, on the sand in Newport Beach, California. Welcome, brother.
Thank you.
Super excited, as we've known each other for over a decade, maybe even longer now, from the original OG CrossFit Scottsdale. You were a member there before you had kids. 22-year Air Force pilot vet. Thank you for your service. I can't wait to get into that. And now at 51?
50.
Okay.
Just turned 50.
Okay. I was like, oh, that's what I thought. You're having a third kid.
Correct.
So we're going to get into all of that. Let's start with, why did you originally join the Air Force? And did you always want to be a pilot? And how did you get into that?
Yeah. I was mentored by my father figure in life was my grandfather, who we talked about, did 38 years, 3 months in the Navy. He was enlisted air crew during World War II. He got reassigned to Kennoway Bay, January of 1942. So it was a pretty exciting time then. And I started flying with him when I was 8 years old. And it wasn't until I moved to Arizona and started working for America West Airlines on the ramp that I realized, and I was 22 then, I realized that aviation was in my blood. And once I figured out what my goal was, there was nothing stopping me.
And so flying, what were some of those original challenges that you got into? And then obviously flying, I think you told me DC-10 was your, what was your favorite aircraft that you flew?
A-10. I didn't have many challenges when it came to flying. Once I mentally made that decision, that was the route I wanted to go, I was all in. There was nothing stopping me. And I put forth a 200% effort and to get through civilian pilot training, which I did at Chandler Airport. And then I actually applied to the Marine Corps for a year. And they said, hey, you're not physically qualified for astigmatism. And I knew the Air Force didn't have any issues with that. So I applied to the Air Force and got selected to fly A-10s in the Michigan Air National Guard and went to pilot training. And the rest is history.
And what was it that you loved about the A-10? You told me that they've since retired it, no longer going to be using it.
They're still using it. It's probably low-hanging fruit, as there's always budget cuts. If we woke up tomorrow morning and they parked them all overnight, I don't think anybody would be surprised. But the best part about the A-10, first and foremost, is the community. You can look up on YouTube. There's a thing called the Grunts of the Sky. The A-10 community likes to get their hands dirty. We stick our nose into some nasty stuff where friendlies could be under fire from enemy, and we're there to intervene and to keep the ground forces safe. That's our primary goal.
Okay, without disclosing anything that we shouldn't share here, can you give us a few sort of stories, whether they were hairy stories or just stories early in your career, and then as you progress, 22 years is a long time in any field, let alone flying massively fast machines through the air at Mach speeds?
There's a ton of stories. There's several that are at the forefront. The bottom line is it's protecting American soldiers from enemy fire. And that happens a lot over the past since 2001. If you're in the A-10 community, if you've been in the A-10 community, you've been there, you've been to Iraq, you've been to Afghanistan, you've been to Syria, or at least one of those over the past 20 years. And that's what we're there for. That's our bread and butter. How do we protect the U.S. service members on the ground? And we did it a lot.
Your retirement, 22 years, long career. We went through that pretty quickly, but could you have kept going?
Absolutely. That's my brotherhood, is going to the squadron. The only reason I retired is the logistics of living in Orange County, California, and having to commute to Indiana. I almost made it to 50. I retired just short of 50. But the logistics of getting to the hotel in the Eastern time zone at 9 p.m. and then waking up at 5:30 a.m. Eastern time zone, 2:30 California time to fly twice, that was the main reason for my retirement. And to expand on that a little bit, do I miss the flying? Yeah. Do I miss the commute? Hell no. Would I rather be sitting here talking with you on the beach in Newport?
Looking at dolphins, by the way. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. They're all over the place right now.
Great set coming in too. Yeah. So life has shifted for you. You have one teenager, one who's heading into their freshman year in high school.
Yep.
And then one who will be starting in what grade?
Fourth grade. Yep.
And then one on the way. So having a kid at 50, don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet. Your grandfather being a 30-plus year veteran himself, would you open the door? Would you inspire your son and possibly, you know, your next child about joining the military? Because I talk about it all the time with my son. And the last, we had a young man on here named Gio a couple episodes ago who's going into the Marines. And
I met Gio.
Yeah. Solid young man.
Yep.
Yeah, phenomenal. It was, I believe, episode 83 that we had him on as one of the very few or rare non-dads to ever come on the show. And it was a very powerful episode. He's enlisting. Again, I have a son who's closer to 18. It's coming up real quick. And I would be happy. I would be content. I would be supportive if my son wanted to go. I would love for him to actually go into the military. And I'm a big believer of every single American between the ages of 18 and 20, mandatory service.
Yeah, 100%. I agree in that too. I think every American should have to do 1 year in the military, learn how to make your bed, learn how to be independent, learn how to follow orders, learn how to give orders, and learn it at a very young age. My regret, you can always Monday morning quarterback, my regret is I didn't get in the military sooner. And I tried. I was talking to recruiters when I was 16 years old. That was a long time ago, different family dynamic. It got sidebar. I had a good job. I was a carpenter right out of high school. And you get a taste of making a little bit of money. And then at 22 years old, I had to make the decision saying, I'm going to make nothing because I want to put all my eggs in this basket, which was the aviation military field. And to expand on that a little bit better, to answer your question, I was a regional airline pilot before I went in the military. And one of the interviews that I went to, they said, hey, why? I said, why don't you go fly? Why don't you be an airline pilot? I said, that career will always be there. There's no time. There's no age restrictions for flying in the airlines. The military, there was age restrictions. And I had to make that happen now. I was always chasing the time clock per se, because I was always up against age restrictions. So here we are. It seems to be my story.
And then retiring at 49. So this is really very recent.
Yep.
How old was the average age of some of the dudes coming up? Because we've all seen Top Gun 2.
Yeah.
Phenomenal movie. If you haven't seen it, you got to go see it. I was resistant too. I was like, come on, Hollywood. You can't do a better job after 20 some years of coming up with a better idea. Phenomenal movie. Tom Cruise is like 67 in that movie, and he looks like he's 42.
Yeah.
But how old were a lot of the guys that were in and around? If you were at 49, what was the average age of some of those pilots?
Yeah, they're in their mid to late 20s. There's a huge gap. And you see the generational shift. We didn't grow up with iPhones. As one of the younger guys put it, if it's not on Instagram, it never happened.
Mm.
And you see some of the goofy things they did. When I was in pilot training, if you got caught flying with a camera, a disposable camera, you were going to be in big trouble. And now everyone's flying with a cell phone in their pocket for many reasons. One, if you eject, even in peacetime, that's your primary means of being picked up.
It's your GPS.
Yeah, it's your GPS. It's your phone. Call someone, send someone a text, I'm over here, come get me. Yeah, it's really different. The difference now is there's a lot less applicants wanting to fly in the military. It's not an easy job. That you start off, your first year of pilot training is a full year. It's literally 53 weeks, I believe, of 12-hour days every single day. And when you're young in a fighter squadron, you're restricted to 12-hour day max if you're flying the next day. You have to be 12 hours free from duty before you can fly. So if you're not flying the next day, there's a lot of times you're in the squadron, 14, 16 hours. So you work your butt off. So the applicant pool with the younger generation, I'd say, is much smaller than what it was when I applied.
Yeah. At Geo's graduation just a few weeks ago, they honored the 4 out of 620 who are actually going to be going into the military as part of the service. That, those numbers aren't great.
No, they're not great.
Yeah. And we won't go too deep into the 400 or 450-year plan of the Chinese and or Russian, but we're going to have a hard time in the future if we don't start to train this younger generation to be a little tougher. And so we talk about that a lot. I got two teenage kids, and there's a thin line between shoving their face in the sand and challenging them to do something at a higher level. I never thought I'd be one of those guys. I'm 45 this year, so I'm close. I never thought I'd be one of those guys who would be like, yeah, this generation is soft and that. It's fucking scary how soft they are.
Yeah, I agree. As we talked earlier, framing a garage addition, and the guy had helped me, 57 years old, he's from back east, and him and I were, we were in step, in tune, and I can't find a 20-year-old guy that's going to work as hard as a 50-year-old and a 57-year-old did. That's tough work. And it was very, as we talked earlier, it was extremely rewarding doing that kind of work, working outside, building something that's going to be there for a long time, way past our days. And the younger generation always wants to find a shortcut, and it's usually by way of a cell phone.
Yeah. You shared a story earlier about your mom holding a flashlight for your grandfather, the same 32-year vet.
Yeah, 38-year
38-year vet. Wow. That's a double lifetime.
Yeah.
Shining a flashlight so that he could finish laying brick after he got home from service from work.
Yeah.
To build a wall.
He was 35 years old. My mom was 8 years old. She held a flashlight, and he built his own house and lived in it from 1957 to 1993.
Where was it?
It's southwest suburbs of Chicago. Yeah. And its house still looks exactly the same, too. We go by it every once in a while.
All right. So we got to do a quick crucible plug here, because you were one of the elders. And
aren't I the oldest?
I'm going to have to go through, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah. As one of the senior graduates from the Crucible, you've had a illustrious military career. You're still flying commercial. You're active. You built a garage. Why the F would you decide to do something like that at this point in your life? And this is for those guys out there who are like, I've already done that. I've already been beaten up. Because we get a lot of vets that come through the program. We've actually had some great success. Shout out to Matt Neely of Warriors Grace, who created a nonprofit to help some of the wounded warriors coming back from not only combat, but just the military in general, and giving them a newfound inspiration to live a better life, to stop joining in on some of those habits that have been with them since their military career and get their mind and their bodies.
Yeah. First off, I'd do it again. I'd like to do it again just because of the back injury I've been nursing still to this day. But I think for people like you and I and our generation, we're wired that way. And I tell the younger kids, mentally, I don't think you change very much. If you've got that killer instinct, mentally, you're not going to change. Physically, but that's a different story. And that's the disconnect that I have right now, is mentally, I want to do all these things, and physically, my body's saying, yeah, you just can't. And we don't accept that word, right? There is no can't, there's just do. So why did I do it? Number one, I've known you a long time. I believed in you the first time I walked into CrossFit Scottsdale, and you flipped over that card. What did it say in that card? Do you remember what it said? There's some message on the card that basically just said, are you going to show up and do the work?
Yeah.
That was the gist of it, which you still sell today, right? And it's a great mantra. So I believe in you. We've known each other a long time, and we just want to be challenged. You fall in the rut of life, work, family, kids, and that dynamic, and sometimes you just need to get out of your element and do something to remind yourself that, hey, you still got some, there's still fuel in the tank, man. And just to keep working on being the better version of yourself, or just keep on working at doing something different than the fall in the rut of suburban Orange County, which is very easy to do. It's very comfortable, and you don't want to get stagnant. You don't want to get comfortable. So I knew exactly what I was getting into to some degree. I knew I was going to be taken out of my comfort zone, and I was completely comfortable with being uncomfortable. Maybe minus part, minus a little part of it towards the end. It was a cold night, but anyhow, it was great, and I'm glad I did it, and I would, no kidding, I would probably do it again.
And you got news of your wife being pregnant after the Crucible to let you know that you're going to be having a baby at 50.
No, it was before that.
Oh, it was before that. Yeah, okay, it was before that. But all within that same time frame.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with you've got to sharpen that sword now for another 18 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be active. You got to be present. You got to be able to work with your hands. And you got to not only raise the two that you have, but you got to raise this new one that's coming on board, who, if you don't, might be softer than the other ones.
Yeah.
So hard times create strong men. Strong men create easy times. Easy times create weak men. And weak men create hard times.
100%.
Love that one. So what are you thinking right now as you're going into this 50th year with a baby coming on board in September? Where's your headspace at? And for the listeners out there, whether they have kids or not, to do it again, God bless you, first of all. Second of all, I don't think I would sign up for that.
Yeah. Once again, it's how are we wired? There is no can't. There's just do. There's some, I can't say really apprehension. There's a little bit of fear of the unknown. And that fear is, what's my energy level going to be like? My 9-year-old is just, he's unstoppable. He's unstoppable. He's tough to keep up with. As you taught in the Crucible, you got enough energy to go out and play with your kids. They only have one childhood. You've taught me a lot. And what I'll say at being 50 is what a really good friend of mine who's almost 65 said when he turned 50. He said, Whitey, he talks like that too. Mm-hmm. The 5-year increments just go by a snap of the fingers. And now you're 45, I'm 50. 45 was just like recently. And I have a part-time job working with younger kids and they're 31. And they think they're old. And I'm like, 31? Dude. Got a long way to go. So there's a little apprehension of just the fear of the unknown, but it's also mentally, financially, and every other measurable capacity, I'm way better suited for this child other than what are the energy levels going to be like when this child's 9 years old, if he's anything like my 9-year-old son.
And is there anything you can think of right now that you would do differently as a 50-year-old for this newborn than maybe you did as a 36-year-old with your firstborn?
Yeah. 36 with the firstborn. No, I don't think so. There's pros and cons to everything. 2 or 3 generations ago, people got married when they're 18, 19 years old, and they had babies because they're dead at 60. That whole thing has changed. Things are a lot harder to come by. It's a lot more expensive. I think our buying power is much more decreased than what it was in, say, like the greatest generation. I don't think I would do things differently. Just because if I had a kid when I was 20 years old, that kid would have had a miserable childhood.
Yeah.
I was a lot more of a hothead. Just a lot older, a lot wiser than the typical young dad. And I don't really see it being that big of a deal. I'm not afraid to operate on minimum sleep. And it doesn't bother me. Would I like to sleep in every day? Yeah. Would I rather get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, drive to Newport Beach and hang out with you? 100%. So it's different. And you hear the younger generation, they don't like to get out of bed. And I was the same way. No, I can't say I would do it any differently. There's a lot of excitement. I love the baby phase. For those of you who have babies or in the grinder, it's easy, right? It's easy. They do 3 things. You're not sitting there trying to figure out. I'm looking up YouTube videos how to do third grade math because it's just different.
The system, what is it called? You can't get the answer.
No child left behind or whatever. Yeah, exactly. It's no kidding. Looking up YouTube videos on how to do third grade math. I'd rather change a diaper and just have it's the miracle of life. Those little newborns, you get to witness the miracle of life.
And the calm that is in you now that probably wasn't there for me, I know that the first 10 years were easy. We're on the same level. We're constantly playing. And then these preteen years into teen years, man, it messed me up. Like I was having a real hard time with it to where I might have been slipping into some old character traits of my own father and decide not to show up at certain times. I found myself avoiding certain situations that I never had before. There was resistance in my fatherhood journey. And it probably only lasted about 18 or 24 months, enough for me to say, all right, I'm going to have to change me because these kids are changing.
Yeah.
They're no longer daddy's home and running up to me. They have their own cell phones. They have their own friends. They have their own life. And instead of taking that personal, like I did something wrong, I had to look at myself and say, you need to change the same way they're changing.
Right.
So I worked on that. And now with teenagers, full board teenagers, 16 and a half and turning 15 this week, I don't think I would be here if I hadn't changed how I was approaching them.
Yeah. And we talked about piggybacking on that. We talked a little bit about this last night, saying when Griffin, when my 9-year-old is 18, I'll have a 9-year-old. In 9 years from now, in 10 years from now, it'll go by fast. That child gets 100% of my attention for the rest of their childhood. And that's pretty amazing. And they still have older siblings to look up to. So it's going to be a completely different dynamic than what we would call traditional. It'll be, some parts of it are going to be awesome, especially that child number 3 gets 100% attention for the latter half, the years that it really matters. While I'll have one, my daughter will be out of college. She'll be a grown woman, and I'll have a son that's just entering college. So
we have a lot of commonalities we've shared over the years, and probably a big reason why we do get along so well. But one of them is the strength and power that was provided to us by our moms. And we also share a similarity that we've lost our moms. You've lost yours more recently. What are some of the things as a man, and I'll say it, a masculine man, that mom taught you? Because that sensitive side of who I am comes from my mom.
Yeah. It was one of those things that I didn't really realize until she passed away. And she was 75, and coming from an old Italian family, I was really young. Everyone lived well into their 90s. Their last several years were not really living, but I certainly expected that my mom was going to be around a lot longer. She wasn't very hands-on, but the number one thing, my mom never said a bad word or judged anyone, even her fiercest enemies. And I spoke with that in her eulogy, but I've never heard her once speak negatively, never heard her judge, never heard her really criticize anyone. And looking back, man, that's all I did, especially when I was younger. Always passing judgment, always criticizing, not knowing that everyone's got their own little battle. These people on the beach, why are they here? Everyone's got their own battle, and who are we to judge? And that's probably what I learned after she passed. If I can go back and punch my younger self in the face, I'd be like, who are you to judge? Who are you to think that you're better than this person or that person? My mom never did that. When she was loyal, she was beyond loyal to her family, particularly her parents. And I didn't realize that till after she passed. And still to this day, I got it she lived in the Chicago area, and I left in 1995. So I haven't been living close to my mom in a very long time. So we talked on the phone all the time. And still to this day, and it's been 15 months since she's passed, I get in the truck and just want to go call mom. Because it's not in my phone book anymore, but it's still that habit pattern is there that I'd get in the truck and I'd always call my mom just to talk to her. And I enjoyed every single conversation. I enjoyed talking to my mom. But that was probably the biggest lesson. And I spoke about that in her eulogy, which was arguably the hardest thing I've ever had to do as the middle child, was to bury my mom and 100% take care of that whole thing without knowing what to do in a different state.
Yeah.
Wasn't prepared for that.
A life learning lesson. There were moments in the first decade that my kids were alive, those really positive moments where I was very similar. Cell phones didn't really exist the way they do now when my mom passed in 2004, but phantom call syndrome, whatever you want to call it, something would be amazing with my kids when they were young. And the first thing I'd think about doing, especially on Sundays, today being a Sunday, is to call my mom and let her know And so I've done some work, right? We talk about the therapies of life and the modalities to help us heal. I've done some work on writing my mom a letter. I don't know if you've done that yet.
No.
Maybe when this baby's born this year, at year one, just sitting down and sharing what life's been like since mom passed away and some of these successes and some of these highs and some of these challenges that you're facing, and express that inner emotion that's circulating through us every day. I had this conversation with a friend the other day, and he's, "I'm a mama's boy." And I was like, "Oh, that must mean you're strong, you're independent,
yeah,
and you understand how important your life is, because that's what moms did, at least mine did."
Yeah, 100%. And that's how I closed out her eulogy. As I said, I was proud to be a mama's boy.
All right, so let's go into this final phase. You've got a newborn coming, okay? The craziest story that they will never, ever know, unless they listen to this podcast or you decide to tell them in your lifetime. I'll give you a second to think about it. A crazy story about how you survived. A crazy story about how you overcame. A crazy story about a late night drinking and you rolled your truck 7 times and you actually got out of it and walked away unscathed. And to this day, that's why you decide to quit drinking. I'm referencing myself in this situation, but crazy wild story out there.
Okay, I got a good one. I don't like to talk about myself too much, but this is, I had to overcome, and you turned me on to David Goggins, and the saying that I say now to some of my close peer group is, what would Goggins do? Is he going to bitch? Is he going to say no? Deal with your own shit and get over it. Growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was lower middle class, working class, good, solid, very diverse, Italian, Irish, tradesman. That's the neighborhood I grew up in.
What was it called?
Hickory Hills, Illinois. That's the city. It's just southwest of Chicago. I was talking to Navy recruiters, 16 years old, and they all walked in my door and said, "You're not going to be an officer." My mom told me, she's just, "You can't do this. You can't do this." My entire childhood, to include my early adult, everyone told me that I couldn't do this, that I couldn't be a pilot, that I couldn't be an officer, that I couldn't go to college. I even talked to, I think it was Arizona State or it was Lewis University. It was an aviation school. I can't remember which school it was. And their response to me when I said, "I want to do this program, I want to enroll 100% full-time right now, go." And the response from the recruiter at the school was, "Maybe you should take a couple community college classes first." Fast forward to when I got the Air Force pilot training, just to talk about the mental commitment, I'm not the smartest guy out there. But the determination was second to none. As I said earlier, once I figured out what I was going to do, there was nothing stopping me. And I had to control that. I had to control that narrative to make sure that I wasn't doing drugs. I wasn't drinking. I lived in a house where everyone partied all the time. But I had 2 full-time jobs all through college. And when I got the Air Force pilot training, I beat everyone. I got the top scores after a year of when you're evaluated for your flying abilities, your leadership, your academic abilities. And not only did I overcome all those barriers and challenges and win all the awards at pilot training after a year of being evaluated every single day at 12 hours a day, I got the best scores that they've seen in over a decade. This is Air Force wide. So it's not the trophies. It's the fact that I had all those barriers that people talk about, huge success stories. Everyone's got their barriers, and you just have to mentally put my efforts into being the best possible pilot I could. And it was very rewarding. And
it's amazing that you used the word barrier, because most people would use a different word to explain why they didn't do something. And instead, you used a word which is exactly what it's meant to, is to overcome. You didn't use any excuses, which you could have easily done.
That's the comfort zone. You can get in your comfortable rut and be like, "I could sit here and do nothing, or I can get uncomfortable and put in the work and make it happen." So I had a lot of barriers, especially my neighborhood. The educated people in my neighborhood was my dad, my mom, my sister, and myself. Those are the college graduates in my entire neighborhood that I grew up in. There's a certain level of perseverance there, and I didn't have that leadership from my dad. I may have indirectly got it from my grandfather, who just built his own house at 35 years old.
When? How old was he when he passed away?
82.
It's a good one.
It's a good run.
It's a good run.
You make it to 80, you won, right?
Yeah.
At least I would consider that a win. But anyhow, there's a certain level of perseverance, and I hope I can share that story with my kids someday, that they get the true meaning of the story, which is once you put your mind to it, you should be unstoppable. Mm. And if not, maybe your heart's not truly there.
Beautiful, beautiful expression. All right, last question. As a civilian, aka a patriot, as I sit here on the beaches of California, I won't use any other language about California as I'm sitting here on the beach, but it is beautiful. How does somebody who has zero military experience, somebody listening out there, how do they support our military? How do they support our government? And obviously not politics, but government. What would you say to somebody listening to this, hanging a flag and a ribbon on the front door, making a donation? Those are all little minor things, but how do we do a better job as Americans of supporting our armed forces in today's society?
I disagree. I think a lot of people hang the flag that they're just paying lip service to it, but go to the parade. Show up at Memorial Day. There's all sorts of Memorial Day services. You can donate. There's tons of places you can donate food or Starbucks gift cards or whatever to people that don't have access to it that are deployed. But I think the flag and the T-shirt, I think those are all symbolic, and that's where it starts. This country is built on a grassroots effort. That grassroots effort doesn't stop. If you want to donate money, I think that's even easier is to donate money. I think there's more depth into fly your flag, proudly. Don't judge. Nowadays, as a conservative American in California, God forbid should I voice my opinion that's dissenting to the far radical left liberal. Politically, our country is a huge mess. Government, I won't speak about that. The next major conflict, which is eventually going to happen, who knows when, that will unify us, because the last time this country was unified was after 9/11, and it's been going downhill ever since. And probably the biggest problem is 24-hour news and smartphones. But I disagree with it there. I think flying the flag and wearing a shirt and putting the flag in your front yard, I think that's all mandatory. I think we all should have a flag in our front yard. But
we got a chance to buy a couple haircuts in San Clemente a few summers ago, getting my son's haircut and three or four Marines sitting there. And we just like buying a cup of coffee for a police officer. Such a simple little thing that we should definitely do more, a better job of.
Yeah.
And then what about the veteran community? Because that's obviously, we feed the homeless. We do some things downtown Phoenix. We know that there's a lot of vets struggling. Are there any organizations that you believe in or trust that are out there? How do we help a retired vet who's not living his best life and doesn't know how?
Yeah, I'm not really smart on that. I would say volunteer at the local VA hospital. Get your kids to volunteer. And that's something I've been bad about recently that I want to recently change with my kids. Be like, you need to get out there and volunteer. You need to give back a little bit to these people who paid a lot with their time, with their energy, with their commitment. They've made a lot of sacrifices from their family to defend this country. So that's a great question. Ask me next time we talk. Mm-hmm. I want to get smart on that because I want to help too. But in the interim, VFW, go to your local VFW. They're going to have all the resources as to answer that exact question, saying, how do we help the vets in this community? How can we give back?
And I'll even throw one in there as again, having young kids and wanting to teach them so much about life and humanity, investing in human capital, having conversations with veterans. Like I learned a lot already in this short podcast from you that I didn't know about you, about your grandfather, about your early beginnings, about the commitment, hard work, using your hands, 30 plus years, 20 plus years of military service. There's a deep level of integrity that goes into that. And so as a civilian, again, I'm constantly learning from military, from the people in the military, from service work in general. And there's got to be better ways to do it. Now, again, we won't get uber political, but the billions of dollars we send to other countries when there's people here on the streets not living is hard to see. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
No, I can go off on a tangent about that politically and what our government is doing and is not doing. And our priorities are, we could speak to this. Our elected officials are all about doing everything to be reelected and not doing the actual work that really needs to be done. And you can see it particularly in LA and San Diego and Portland and Chicago and Denver, Seattle. Why isn't the government fixing this? They're worried about being reelected. So how's that working out for Bud Light? There you go.
Clear. All right. I got one more bonus question here. Your training, because I think that's important as we do, everybody on this show listening, as we're all aging every day, right? I've already shifted and adapted a lot of my training at 45 to be more primal, to be more natural, to be less weight load bearing. So I've started to make that shift, obviously, from healing an injury. What has your shift been like, and what does your PT log look like these days?
Built a house. No, just yesterday I did a hot yoga class, which is helping the sciatica issue, which has been a bear. I had to modify a little bit with it's on my left side. So it had to be a couple of things that were pretty painful going through. And then afterwards, after an hour of hot yoga, I jumped in the sauna for another 10 minutes. That's the meditation room for me, just to absorb what I just put myself through and try not to get bogged down in the frustrations of having a back issue that is in the way of everything right now. It's very frustrating. Mm. And now you got to figure, what would Goggins do? If it hurts to the point where you can't do it or it might make it worse, then figure out something that's going to work. And I'm trying to look at, I'm not built to swim, but maybe getting in the pool is going to help. And just swim laps. The heavy weightlifting, I don't know. It's funny because I've got this back issue when I stopped doing heavy deadlifts. So maybe I shouldn't have stopped doing heavy deadlifts. Probably not. But yeah, definitely the stretching. The yoga thing, which I'm new to since like COVID, I wish I had started that in my 30s because I thought it was just like, I thought it was the pussy thing to do. And then you go and do it and be like, holy cow. Number one, it's really hard. Number two, your body feels amazing afterwards. And it's a quick progression, right? You do it 2, 3, 4 times a week. Within a month, you're going to see, you're going to be able to put your hands on the floor, keep your legs straight, no problem. So it's good in that aspect to get immediate feedback. So that's what I've been doing. I want to do more. I want to train for the tactical games you turned me on to.
Yeah.
I got all the parts for my AR ready to go. Mm-hmm. I got a ballistic vest all ready to go, but the back isn't letting me do that. So I'll stick with yoga for a while and some upper body exercise that doesn't interfere with it until that gets better.
Clear. Eric Whitey White, man, it's an honor and a pleasure to not just know you, man, but to know that you exist. And again, I'm not an ass kisser, as I'm sure you're aware of and some of the listeners are, man. But when you see a man cut from a cloth like yours, I respect it, I value it, I appreciate it, and I honor it. Thank you for our friendship. Thank you for your service. Thank you for just being a badass motherfucker. There's not a lot of them out there, but you're one of them, brother. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
If you got some value out of this show, we simply ask that you just pay it forward, share it, send it, text it, post it on your social media. Keep this movement going. Thank you for being here today, Eric. Listeners, thank you for being here. Peace.